We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Back in the Keys studios on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game, John Chuckery Show, hanging out with you here on this Saturday afternoon. A couple more hours to go, 404-741-0929, Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You want to be a part of the show, feel free to leave us a comment there. We are asking you to download the Audacy.com app. We know that you're not in your car as much as what you used to be, but you want to listen to the station and the show. How do I do it? Best way is the Audacy.com app. We want you to put that on one of your devices, right? The smartphone, the Alexa speakers, your tablet, your Laserdisc, your Palm Pilot, your Light Bright, Coleco, whatever your device is, just put it on something to be able to catch us when you're on the go. Social media is at 929TheGame, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's always the best way to be a part of the show. Give me a follow on my personal Twitter handle, at JMCH316, at JMCH316. That, of course, your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. We will talk to our buddy Jason Longshore coming up here in about 20 minutes as we get ready for Atlanta United tomorrow against Inter Miami, coming off a unsuccessful run in CONCACAF, officially eliminated on Tuesday night, and now back to just regular MLS action. This, though, is your look at all things Atlanta Falcons. It is the Falcons flyover. So, NFL analyst Lance Zierlein, in talking about the Falcons' pick of Kyle Pitts at number four, thought it was the right decision for the Falcons to do it. So, he says, San Francisco's late March trade with Miami to move up to number three overall may have set an unattainable market for teams hoping to secure the number four pick from Atlanta. But I feel like the Falcons made the right decision to stick and pick, as Pitts was the best of all of their options. His size gives him an advantage over defensive backs. His speed gives him an advantage over linebackers and safeties. And his route running and ball skills are simply multipliers for those aforementioned physical advantages. He can play wide from the slot or in line and gives Matt Ryan a reliable target with very few limitations. He was the second best player in the draft. Now, obviously, the first best player in the draft, according to him, would have been Trevor Lawrence. Now, me personally, as I've said, and I love the Kyle Pitts pick, I personally would have taken Penei Sewell. Give me another big offensive lineman up front to help protect Matt, because I think that's I don't think you can have too many of those guys, and let everybody kind of figure out and sort it, you know, out from there. But that being said, I think the Pitts pick, there was only two guys that you were – it was either Sewell or Pitts. Now that we know that the Falcons were not going to take quarterback at number four, no matter who was there, sure, unless Trevor Lawrence was sitting at four, unless Jacksonville, the Jets, and the 49ers all passed on Trevor Lawrence – the only way the Falcons were going to draft quarterback at four. We know that now, based on what the head coach and general manager and everybody has said about all of this. So we know now that they were not going to pick quarterback at four. That left you with two players, Pitts and Sewell, at that point. That's it. Now, the other part that he brings up, and we talked about this right before the draft and talked about on the College Football Show, the market for trading up to that number four pick dried out. And there were multiples of reasons. Number one, the Lions general manager came out and said, hey, we're open for business at seven if somebody wants to come up there. Well, if you're New England or Chicago or Washington and you were trying to move up toward higher up to try to get quarterback, in a lot of ways it made more sense to go to seven than it does four. And you say, well, that's only three spots. Yeah, when you're trying to go from 15 or 19 up to four versus seven, that's a lot of extra capital that you have to give up. So that's one. Two is, once the Broncos traded for Teddy Bridgewater, and if you want to put any stock into what Mark Schlereth, who I don't think is some jabron ham and egger, I like Mark a lot. I think Mark's a really good analyst. But if you want to put any stock in what he said, he thinks that the Denver Broncos are the team that is in line to go get Aaron Rodgers. So if that's the case, and they've already traded for Teddy Bridgewater, then they're certainly not looking at taking quarterback at number 9, who is the next maybe highest team that was going to take quarterback for all of it. So that market had dried up pretty quickly. No matter who, it wouldn't matter if Fields was sitting there at 4 or Trey Lance was sitting there at 4. I think the market had dried up about teams that wanted quarterback going up. And you saw the Patriots that literally just sat back and just waited. You know, they weren't going to give up a whole bunch of their draft this year and future draft, because once you start talking about 15-4, 19-4, that all starts to get into multiple first-round draft picks. Not just, hey, let's swap first-rounders and go from there. No, that's we swap a few picks this year in the draft, and you're giving me next year, or in Washington's case, the following year. So you're talking about 19-4, probably 3 first-rounders to move up that high. Well, that's a lot of draft capital. You know, that's a lot of capital for, by the way, an offseason this past year that had very kind of mixed reliability on evaluations, right? Yeah, we had pro days, but you weren't spending a lot of time with the guys. You weren't doing face-to-face. They weren't coming to your facility and talking with you. There was no combine, right? You know, the evaluation process was, okay, we're going to talk to them with Zoom calls and things like that, and we're going to watch them do some workouts. Well, yeah, all those pro days look great when it's a controlled environment on your own campus with your own guys and all that kind of stuff. So the evaluation process got a little bit more difficult for it. So that part is definitely true, that we talked about that right on draft night. The market, unfortunately, for teams going up just dried out. So that left you with 2 picks, Pitts or Sewell. The debate will rage, right? 5 years from now, we'll have a better understanding about who got the better of that. What pick was better? Was Sewell a better pick? Was Pitts a better pick? Like I said, me personally, I would have gone with Sewell, but I had no issue with either guy. But both of them, I think, are home run caliber types of picks out there. And if you go back and listen to last night's show, we broke down tight ends, first round tight ends, and some of the greats of all time. So not just the T.J. Hockenson and Cole Kmets and Kyle Brady's of the world that were drafted as first round, and Vernon Davis that were drafted as first round tight ends, but also tight ends that with the Hall of Fame pedigree, the Tony Gonzalez, Rob Gronkowski's and guys like that of the world, Antonio Gates, guys like that, and what they did in their first year as well. Now, obviously, the other part of the Falcons that really has not been addressed yet is this pass rush. And I'm going to say that I'm legitimately concerned as we sit here on, what the hell is the date today? May what? What is this, 8th? May the 8th be with you? May 8th today, that I have legitimate concerns about what they're going to do as far as sacking the quarterback. And we've talked about this. You know, you got to tell me how we get to 40 sacks. How do you as a team get to 40 sacks out there? You know, when Oluokun got 3 last year, Deion Jones had 4.5 sacks last year. He never had a season where he had more than 1 sack. So do I expect that number? Yes, Pease plays a little bit more aggressive style. Do I expect that number to go up? No. I think that number is more likely to go down than it goes up, just given his historical accuracy. Foyer probably stays about where the same is. Cannon O'Neill, had a sack. 26 had a sack. Okay, that's probably about where safeties and corners lie. Maybe Grant can get an extra sack or two. Grady only had 4 sacks last year. So maybe that number goes up a couple more, but that number's not going up 10 more. Now, obviously, right now you're pinning your ears. Well, I think you're pinning your ears on a few players. One is you're pinning your ears on, can Dante Fowler legitimately have that big bounce back season? Can he go so if you're driving in your car, slow your speed down because of what I'm about to say. Can Dante Fowler go from that 3 sack to 13 sack guy in one season like that? I know, just easy. Don't drive off the road. If you're driving, slow down. I'll give you a second to regroup and get the car straightened back on and pull over on the side of the road. Can Dante Fowler go from 3 to 13? Brother, I'm going to have to see that to believe it. you're going to have to really, you know, as a Missourian would say, show me. Because I'm not sure I'm buying that he's going from 3 to 13. Could he? Yeah. I think realistically, if he gives you 7 or 8 sacks, you probably feel happy about that. And honestly, he's probably done as an Atlanta Falcon because his contract becomes more negotiable to be able to move on from him at that point. So is this a make or break year for Dante Fowler? Yeah. If he has 3, I can tell you this. If he has 3 sacks, there's literally not a reason to keep him on this football team. His dead money is not that unmaneuverable. You know, you couldn't cut him after 1 year because it did cost too much, and you're already in cap purgatory. Even splitting up any kind of cost on what they would owe him just would still be too much. After this year, though, yeah, legitimately, it's much, much easier to move on from him. If he has 3 sacks, I don't care if he was hurt. I don't care if it was performance. I don't care what the issue is. If I look at Pro Football Reference and I see 3 sacks in that column, not a reason for him to be here the following year. I don't care if you bring back Buddy Ryan up from the grave and have him figure out a way to coach him. I don't care if you get Dick LeBeau to come in here and coach this. He won't be here with another 3 sack season out of all of it. You know, Kaminsky was a guy that had a sack. Jacob Tuioto-Marinier, remember, he was a defensive player of the week winner with his 1 sack performance. Was it 1 sack and 2 forced fumbles or something, you know, like that out there? But how they get there, I have no idea. I have no idea. It starts with Dante Fowler, I can tell you that. But it's legitimate concern about, okay, who's going to line up on the other side of Dante Fowler right now? Because you didn't address anything. And miss me with the Tycon Graham and all that. That kid had 6 sacks in 4 years at Texas. All right? Yeah, he's a defensive lineman. He's an undersized interior lineman. And he did play defensive end. Here's what I know. At Texas, okay, where they can dominate teams, he had 6 sacks in 4 years. Doesn't mean he can't be a great defensive player or anything like that. I'm just telling you, based upon what I know now, you come out of a program like that and you had 6 sacks in 4 years, I don't see 10 or 12 sacks or 7 or 8 sacks written all over him. Then Marlon Davidson, who it was all but a lost season last year. 8 games played last year. I can't even believe he played 8 games out there. He only had 8 tackles, had no tackles for loss. For a guy that's supposed to be a hybrid, either end or tackle, depending on how they want to use him, bulk him up, play tackle, drop him down a little bit, start to play some end like he played at Auburn. But it was a lost season last year. So in a lot of ways, you get him right from the scratch and in the start. So I don't know what to expect, you know, out of him. But the reality is, we can talk about Matt and Julio and Pitts and all that kind of stuff. When you talk about Grant and Terrell and building their young secondary, in the NFL, if you can't sack the quarterback, your team won't get where it needs to be. If your goal is to put a Super Bowl trophy above your head and stick one in your trophy case at your facility location, if you can't sack the quarterback in today's NFL, you won't. Somebody asked the question about what did I think that was the reason that the 49ers went from 4-12 to 13-3. And I didn't know this until I looked it up. I'm like, well, let me look at what their sack totals were as a team. It was 37 in the 4-12 season. It was 48 in the 12-4 season, or 13-3, excuse me. So 4-12, 37 sacks. 13-3, 48. You got a team that averages 3 sacks a game. Guess what you're going to do in the NFL? You can just be even moderate on offense. You're going to win a lot of football games. And that's what the 49ers did that year. All right, we come back. Jason Longshore going to join us. Get you ready for my Inter Miami and Atlanta United tomorrow. Sports Radio After the Game, the Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back with you on the John Chuckery Show, live in the Kia Studios, hanging out with you on a Saturday afternoon. Going to take you till 3 o'clock this afternoon, 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Odyssey.com app, so you catch us on the go. Social media is at 929TheGame. Hit me up on my Twitter page. Follow me at JMCH316. Well, we get ready for Atlanta United tomorrow, taking on Inter Miami. It will be a pregame of 12:30 with a 1 o'clock kick. He will be on the call for all of that, along with Mike Connie. As Jason Longshore joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer, of course. As always, follow Jason on Twitter at Longshoe. And, of course, when Jason and I have a face-to-face confrontation. I always shake his hand and congratulate him on how he's done. Jason, how are you today, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. We had Coach on Coach Crime. You know, it's funny, Jason, we were doing a regular 7 to 11 show, which is sometimes rare these days. But anyway, that's a separate story. But we were doing our show Tuesday night, and I looked up as the match was ending, and I saw the two coaches kind of, it's sort of, you know, just without audio or kind of, you know, knowing what was going on, it did look like some jaw-jacking between the two. And obviously, we're still a few days later, and the fallout of it, both coaches are still answering questions about it. What did you make of all of that between the two coaches after the match on Tuesday?
Yeah, it sounds like a good bit of it went back to the game before, where Jim Curtin said that Gabriel Heinze didn't really, you know, wasn't really happy with some of their tactics and maybe didn't want to shake his hand at that point. It's feeling a little overblown, and I was a little surprised Jim Curtin went into it as much as he did and then brought it back up the second time he did media this week, because look, these things happen. You know, you lose a match, the other team's time wasting, you get frustrated, you're going to say something about it. Jim Curtin knows his team was time wasting. He didn't really deny it in his first statement. I thought Sergio Santos went above and beyond with the time wasting, and that was what seemed to really upset Gabriel Heinze on Tuesday, because the incident where Santos was being substituted and then all of a sudden, when his number was up on the board, had a cramp and had to sit down, that's over the top. You know, I hate to go into the unwritten rules because I hate those things, but time wasting where you take a lot of time on a goal kick, where you are going to take the throw, but no, you're going to leave it for somebody else. Stuff like that is common. Stuff where you sit down when you're being subbed and act like you're hurt, that's a little beyond what's acceptable. And, you know, Gabriel Heinze was yelling at the Philadelphia bench about that, and I'm assuming that was a big part of their conversation after the match. Heinze had his thing to say about it yesterday. It was the first time he had a chance to talk to the media when he knew what had been said. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know why it's still becoming a thing on the Philadelphia side of it at this point.
Is Gabriel Heinze's reputation a little bit of that? You know, he's got a little bit of that attitude, because I like it. I'll be honest with you. I got no issue with it. If he wants to jaw jack and he doesn't like something, speak his mind. You know, that's kind of what he said is, you know, if I got something to say, I'll look in the eye and say it. Yep. Is that kind of his reputation? You know, he's got a little bit of cantankerousness in him.
Oh, yeah. No, he's definitely got that. I mean, he has a strong opinion about the way the game should be played, both from like a coaching perspective and a tactical perspective, but also what's acceptable and what's not. And look, Philadelphia wins the series because they take advantage of Atlanta kind of falling apart a little bit with their focus after conceding in the home leg. Philadelphia outscores Atlanta. Atlanta was the better team in large portions of the series. And you're going to be frustrated, and that's fine. The time-wasting elements were really above and beyond from Philly, and it set him off. And he wasn't happy about it, and he told him to his face, told Jim Curtin that he wasn't happy about it to his face. And I guess Jim Curtin wanted to use the media to start calling names.
Jason Longshore joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotlines. We get ready for Atlanta United to enter Miami tomorrow, 12:30 pregame, 1 o'clock kick, as Jason and Mike will be on the call for all of it. Obviously, goal scoring still, you know, a big issue. Defense and goalkeeping, everything, you know, has been obviously excellent so far this year. But getting the ball in the back of that, chances have been created in all those kinds of things. How would you describe the progress so far of the elite goal scorer in MLS and Yosef Martínez? How do you think his progress is coming along as you sort of watch him so far?
His timing's not there, and that's just going to take games, and that's just going to take experience. There were a couple of crosses that I thought he should have done better with on Tuesday night that were well-delivered from the right side. I think Brooks Lennon had both of them, and it looked like Joseph just mistimed going up in the air. He was late on both. I don't think it's anything physical at this point. It just appears to be a timing issue, and you've got to get the reps underneath you in game situations. You can only do so much in training to replicate this. You've got to get those reps in games to knock that rust off. I do think you also need to create some different kinds of chances as well. the game against Philly on Tuesday, they worked the right side really well, got Brooks Lennon free many times, and he put in dangerous crosses. But when that's not on, and this is kind of the next step for Atlanta United in the attack, you've got to get additional runners into the 18, a late run into the box. So maybe the third time you don't put that cross into the back post like you put the first two in. You cut a ball back on the ground to the top of the 18 to an Emerson Hyndman, you know, to a Santiago Sosa making a late run. Just got to add a little more variety in the attack.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jason, because that's one of the things that I read was that this may not really all be on Yosef himself. And obviously he's got his own adjustment and trying to physically get back. Mm-hmm. But has this team done a good enough job of giving him the kind of leads and the kind of chances and opportunities to do what he does best?
Yeah, it's not bad, but it needs to continually improve. You're creating chances. Can you create better chances? That's kind of the next step for this. But you know, when you build a team, and Gabriel Heinze had something to work with here from the beginning, he's not building from scratch, but when you build a team, you're going to build the foundational elements first. And in this game, and I think in a lot of sports, you're going to start from the defensive side of things. And that doesn't mean Atlanta's been defensive. That means Atlanta has focused on what they do defensively first. They press up high. They try to defend in the other team's half. They are going to concede potentially some counterattacks, and you've got to continue to get better at dealing with those. But you want to defend as far away from your own goal as possible. The positional play, the where the team is shaped, where players are, some of the interchange, those things are there. They're getting better. It's further along than I thought it might be a month in. But, yeah, then you've played seven games in a month, and that does add up. That makes it a little bit difficult. And now you've got to add those finishing elements, not just creating a chance, but creating an even better chance, creating different kinds of chances, and getting more players into dangerous positions. So those are the elements that I think we're going to continue to see develop for this team over the next month.
No Barco again tomorrow. I did think it was, you know, speaking of Gabriel Heinze, you know, he kind of put a little bit of the onus about what's going on with Barco on just the fact of this cramped, condensed schedule. Anything to that? I think it's kind of crazy where you're playing, you know, Saturday, Tuesday and things like that. But I guess if you want to be in CONCACAF and things like that, it's not gonna roll, you know, just once every 6 or 7 days. You're gonna have to jump through some of those hoops to be a part of it.
Yeah, what's tough this year that makes it different, I mean, even than previous years where you're doing CONCACAF early on, is you weren't able to have a normal preseason. You know, you were limited in what you could do in preseason and where you could go, and you were worried about having a COVID outbreak in the team because that'll wreck you in preseason. We've seen that with Miami a little bit where they've struggled for fitness late in games because they missed time in preseason due to a COVID situation in the group. The other element too, and I think this could have showed up with Barco in New England, is you have to travel day of the game if it is a 3-hour or less flight. And Foxborough is really tricky because you add on a 45-minute bus ride on top of that. Mm-hmm. So you had to fly to Providence, ride the bus, day of the game, go play. That's not the best preparation for situations. And you saw two muscle injuries in that game. I don't know if that's coincidence.
What do we make of this matchup tomorrow? You know, obviously, Atlanta United has at least got some rest, you know, coming off of Tuesday. They don't have to worry about looking forward to any more CONCACAF. What are we looking for tomorrow in this matchup?
With Miami, I think you're looking at what they do on the right side because Robbie Robinson, their right winger, is out injured. Kelvin Leerdam, their right back, did not train on Thursday. He's not going to be 100% if he plays. You're going to want to exploit that. This is a little bit older team in some parts of the field under Miami. They've got talent in Gonzalo Higuain and Blaise Matuidi, but they've also got some years on them. And a 1 o'clock kick on a Sunday afternoon is going to be a little tough for them. It's going to be warm. It's going to be a little difficult to play. And if you look at Miami's numbers so far this season, they've wilted at times late. They've conceded goals late. It's something that I think Atlanta can take advantage of. I'm really curious to see what the lineup looks like tomorrow. I wonder if with that, you know, kind of backlog of games that Atlanta's had, and looking at a Miami team that has some issues with fitness from time to time, do you see a lot of new faces really try to run them in the first half and wear them down to take advantage over time? It wouldn't surprise me if we see a new starter or two in the lineup tomorrow.
Saw Sosa get his first goal. You know, how do you look at that second score? I mean, that seems to be, I know what Josef will be, but where does that second guy come from? Where does that next guy, whether it's Barco or Sosa or whatever, where is that next guy coming from, Jason? Because, you know, unfortunately, I know it's early, but you got to start to turn some things around and figure some things out. And creating chances is great, but, you know, to not use a bad pun, but it's a net results kind of business.
Mm-hmm. No, you've got to continue to work at this, and getting more numbers into the 18 and into the attacking third, I think, is a big part of it. A lot of people, because in the past where you see teams play a 4-3-3, you see that second score come from a wide position, one of the wingers. It could happen here, but the way Gabriel Heinze looks at it, the wingers are more of playmakers than goal scorers. I think it comes from those central positions, and it's a horrible time for Barco to be injured, because I think it's Barco and Hyndman are two of the players who can step up and give you more goals. Now, they've each got one this season. Barco's off a rebounded free kick that he nailed, and Hyndman kind of cleaning one up, but you want to see those two start to make those late runs into the box. One of them jump into the back post from time to time. Those are the two that I think can really transform the offense when they get the timing right of their runs into the final third.
Last thing, Jason, and I know this is a little bit of projection into the future, but next Saturday will be, you know, Montreal. It'll be the first opportunity for full stadium at Atlanta United. We saw the Braves last night, a little bit less than a sellout, but I mean, still almost 39,000 last night. So awfully, awfully close. And obviously what Atlanta United and Mercedes-Benz, about 42,500 is what that lower area will seat. How close to filling that thing up are you hearing or projecting or think that Atlanta United is going to have come next Saturday when they take on Montreal?
You know, these things kind of seem to change day by day as people get more comfortable and, you know, people get their vaccinations and are comfortable getting out into crowds where, you know, maybe a week ago people might not have been comfortable going to this, but it seems to be ramping up with that comfort level over time. I don't know if it'll be at the full max, but I don't think it'll be all that far off. This is a really exciting moment. You know, even the last game where it was half of that lower bowl, it felt like a home game again.
Yep.
And that feeling is really important. You know, we've seen a year where it's felt like you've had games in neutral venues and it's just kind of flat at times. And the way Atlanta United's always played, they feed off of that emotion from the crowd, both good and bad. When they're on the road, they feed off of it too. You need that, and it'll really change the game. I hope it's as big of a crowd as people are comfortable attending, you know. And the thing about the stadium, we've been in there when it's been empty, we've been in there when it's been, you know, a small crowd and half crowd. The staff does such a great job of making people feel comfortable. They do everything they can possibly do to make it safe and make it comfortable for people. So you'll be well taken care of, follow all the protocols, and I'm really excited to see a lot of people in the building next weekend.
Well, anything's better than that pumped-in fake crowd noise and all that nonsense. And, yeah, that makes me want to just slam my head in the TV. So on Twitter, at Longshoe, you can follow him there. And, of course, he'll be on the call tomorrow afternoon, he and Mike Connie, as Atlanta United takes on Inter Miami, pregame at 12:30, 1 o'clock kick. Jason Longshore, join us on the waitfor.com hotline. As always, Jason, enjoy the match tomorrow. Be good. We will talk here soon.
All right, appreciate it.
You got it. When we come back, I've got your wild card for when we get into this Hawks playoff run, and I'm going to give you some numbers to go along with it. We'll talk about that next. Chuck, we're hanging out in the Key Studio. Sports Radio 910 The Game, the Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back with you on the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out in the Key Studios on a Saturday afternoon, 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Odyssey.com app is how you catch us when you're on the go. Social media is at 929 The Game. Hit me up at JMCH316 on the Twitter machine. So, Nate McMillan, I guess, just had his press conference, and DeAndre Hunter just went through a full practice today. No setbacks, according to him. Went through a 5-on-5 practice. Also did some scrimmaging. Potentially could be back coming up on Monday. So that would be really good news. I don't believe that Cam Reddish will be back this season. Hunter, if they can get him back Monday, okay. Let's see what he can do. I like the idea of if you're going to play him in the playoffs, get him back for these last four games and at least start to get his minutes up. You know, he'll be on that, you know, quote unquote load management as far as his minutes goes. But, you know, listen, everybody that you can get back right now as we make this final little push and, you know, four home games, which is also nice just in the sense of no travel for the Hawks, right? So he doesn't have to worry about trying to get on and off planes or just anything like that. He can just be here, practice, play, what have you, and not have to do anything. And so, you know, hopefully that's good news out there. So we'll keep you updated and we'll see what the injury report looks like as they get ready to take on Washington coming up on Monday. Of course, we'll have all of your action right here on your home of the Atlanta Hawks, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, as Steve Holman and Mike Connie will be on the call for all of that. But speaking of the Hawks and minutes out there, as we get ready for the Hawks playoff run, as they currently sit in that precarious five spot, right? We've talked about the fact that we want to see them be the 4 or 5 seed. And right now, as they sit in the 5 seed, only a half a game behind the Knicks in the four, who are in the 4 spot, and only a half a game ahead of the Heat, who are in the 6 spot. Now, why is the 4 or 5 spot so important? Well, number one is no play-in game, right? You know, the whole cockamamie way that the NBA's got this play-in game, right? The 7 and 8 seed, when the season ends, play each other. The winner gets the 7 seed of that. Then the loser plays the winner of the 9-10 seed for the 8 seed. That makes sense? No? Okay, well, that's not supposed to make sense. That's NBA math for you. But anyway, so you avoid the play-in game. Also, importantly, is even if you do get into one of those spots, you don't have to worry about playing the top three. You don't see Milwaukee, Brooklyn, or Philadelphia, which those three teams have clearly separated themselves from the rest of the Eastern Conference. So you avoid the top three teams where there's that gap in here's the halves of the East and here's sort of everybody else in the East. And look, no question about it that the Hawks can win any 4-5 matchup that they're in. I don't care if it's New York. I don't care if it's the Heat, the Celtics, Hornets, anybody you want to throw out there. There's nothing about that 4-5 matchup that says that the Hawks can't win that opening series. And look, just even being the 4 or 5 seed is already a huge win for the Atlanta Hawks at this point. Just we wanted a playoff run. We're going to get the playoffs. I think the Hawks only have to – even if the Hawks only win one of their last four, I think that they can't even be worse than the 8 seed or something like that right now. So, but look, the Hawks have a lot in front of them that they can knock these last four out and take care of business. I mean, they got the Rockets, who are no good. The Orlando Magic stink. You know, Washington is fighting just to get into that final play-in game spot. So, yeah, you got a couple against Washington, but they're – how about this? Washington's 31-36. So that's two of your games. Orlando's 21-46. That's another one of your games. And Houston is arguably the number one or two worst team in the NBA at 16-51. Right? There's a lot of good to be had there of something we've talked about with the schedule all year long. You're looking for a wild card come playoff time? How about Bogdanovich? Listen to these numbers this year for Bogdanovich. I was going kind of through in looking at it because, you know, obviously he's a guy that was one of the big free agents that was brought in here and one of the guys to kind of help reconstruct this roster and help this thing head in the right direction and take that next step and become a playoff team. And he's obviously battled injuries. Him and Gallinari, the two big free agent guys, have certainly battled lots of injuries and dealt with a lot of different things, you know, at this year. But when Bogdanovich plays, this team does well. And when he plays good minutes, this team does well. So this year, when Bogdanovich has played 30 or more minutes, just 30 or more minutes, that's been 21 times this year that he's played 30 or more minutes. The Hawks in those games are 14-7. He's a plus 61, averaging 21.05 points per game. And in fact, in that 21 games, he has scored 20 or more points in 14 of those 21 games. So when he gets a chance to play strong minutes, 30 and above, and he's had some 35, 36, 38, even some 40-plus minute games, but use even the low bar of 30 minutes, right? Out of a 48-minute stretch where he plays a majority of the time out there. The Hawks do really well. And he himself has provided a lot of offensive punch in that time when he's available. So the Hawks do well at 14-7. He scores over 20 a game. And like I said, he's only had 7 of those 21 games where he didn't score at least 20 points in one of those games. So if you're looking for trends or X factors and things to watch out for about, okay, you know, what are some of the things to look for about how do the Hawks advance and how do the Hawks make a run in the playoffs? There's a number to keep in mind. Is Bogdanovich healthy and can he play 30 minutes a night? Because when he does, really good things happen for the Hawks. You know, you'll take a plus 61 in any 21-game stretch because, especially when you come playoff basketball time, because, look, things go up and down so quickly. And yeah, sometimes in a 21-game stretch like that, where he plays a lot of minutes, you have some really good games and you have some crap games, right? You have games like Detroit, you know, or Philadelphia where you get blown out by 25, 40 points. Then you also have the flip side where you blow teams out by 25, 30 yourself. But when you average it all out, if you've got a guy that's a plus 61 over 21 games and your record is 14-7, simply by him playing 30 or more minutes and he's a 20-point scorer, that's a really good sign for your basketball team. Now, look, the Hawks can certainly match up with anybody in that first-round series, as we said. But that will get amped up completely in the next round, depending on who it is, whether it's, you know, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, or Philadelphia, however that top three shakes out at this point. Because right now, there's only three games that separate Philly, Milwaukee, and Brooklyn, with Brooklyn and Milwaukee actually tied right now. So both of those teams have the same record, and they're three games out of the top spot, which is Philadelphia. So fair to say that Philly's obviously on a really strong foothold right now to be the number one overall seed, but the 2-3 seed is obviously very much up in the air and undecided, you know, right now. So whoever the Hawks take on, whether it's Brooklyn, Milwaukee, or Philadelphia, they're going to really have their work cut out for them. And I don't think, frankly, that they match up as well, or I would certainly think nobody would pick them to probably win that second-round series. Anything can happen, and you get in the playoffs, and you roll the dice, and you see what happens, you know, from there. But it's going to be a really tough matchup, you know, and the Hawks have had their struggles against some of those teams. Now, remember, they haven't played Brooklyn since the very beginning of the year. They knocked out those Brooklyn games really early in the season. They've played Philadelphia and Milwaukee much more here as we've kind of come down, you know, the home stretch. Remember, they just wrapped up a couple of road games in Philadelphia, a week ago. You know, and they've had a couple of home games against Milwaukee as the month of April was wrapping up. But the Nets, you know, they're a different team even from when the Hawks saw them. I think the Hawks saw them in the first, 2 weeks of the season is when they played the Nets. And they haven't seen them since out of all of it. But the Hawks right now sit at 37-31, 21-11 at home. That's why even getting the 4 seed would be so nice. I asked this question of the night. Can they bring the MLK jerseys for playoff time? Hawks are 9-1 when they wear the MLK jerseys this year. When they do the Unity Night, wear the MLK jerseys. Huh? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, somebody blessed them. I mean, somebody gave them the Fanoinks, you know, on it. But can they wear those jerseys? Would the NBA let them wear some of those at home? Because 9-1's 9-1. I don't want to break any mojo. But 9-1 is 9-1 for all of it. But the Hawks have been a really good home team, which is why you'd love to see them, you know, get that 4 seed, you know, especially against, you know, New York, having to travel up to, you know, the greatest, you know, or the most famous arena in the world, the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, having to go on the road there. But look, 4 or 5 seed, you still feel really good right now as a Hawks fan with all of that. And the idea of going into a playoff series where you don't have some cockamamie thing where you got to win 1 or 2 games just to get in to the actual first round. Are they calling this? Are they calling that play and stuff the first round? Please tell me they're not going to call that the first round of the playoffs or whatever. Like the NCAA tournament likes to tell you that the play-in games are the first round. No, it's not. It's just a stupid cockamamie gimmick that they should have Doink the Clown managing all of that because it's such a gimmick out of all of it. And so is this. Like the broadcast should have fake Razor and fake Diesel on it because it's a complete gimmick to be a part of all of this. But 4 or 5 seed, Hawks find themselves in a really, really good position. And with the way the schedule rolls out, nothing says that the Hawks can't win all 4 of these games. And if they do, hard to imagine them not being the 4 seed. Hard to imagine the Knicks going 4-0 down the stretch themselves. And you know, the Knicks have 5 games left. So hard to imagine them, you know, running the table and taking it ahead of the Hawks, you know, if the Hawks find a way to go 4-0 out of all of it. But it sets itself up. I mean, it's all in the Hawks' hands. Right now, you've got all the games at home. You've got bad playoff, or you got bad teams that you're going to – and they're all bad teams. None of those teams are that good that the Hawks are going to see. Yeah, the Wizards are interesting because obviously they have 2 elite-level players. But what's that gotten them? I saw a stat where it said Westbrook is the first player in NBA history to have – what was it, like 50 points and 50 assists in a 3-game stretch? Okay, what's that gotten him this year? Yeah, he's gonna have like a double-double average or triple-double average for the 4th time in his career. What's that gotten him, though? They're 31-36 on the year, and they're scratching and clawing just to try to hang on to the 10 seed in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, Beal's averaging 1 million points a game. Westbrook's having a monster year. What's it gotten him? And those are 2 elite-level players out of it. So those are, you know, look, anytime you have those 2 guys, they can go off and they can make your life a nightmare. But you have them at home. They're going to have to stay up here in Atlanta. They're not a good basketball team overall. I don't know. You like the Hawks' chances. Let's say they even go 3-1. Say they split with Washington. You got a bad Orlando team who's awful. You have an even worse Rockets team. How much do you think the Rockets don't want to play that game coming up next weekend? That game is next Sunday. Can you imagine how much the Rockets don't want to come to Atlanta and play that final game in a season where they're 16-51? They may ask some of the trainers to suit up for that game at this point. All right, we get back from the top of the hour. Will the Falcons have no choice but to trade Julio Jones? Yep, we said it. We'll talk about it next. Chuck, we're hanging out in the Kia Studios. 1 more hour to go. Sports Radio Halftime of the Game, the Odyssey.com app.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.